This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. As promised, you're going to get tickets to go see The Wiz. It's Wizards Wednesday on The Fan. For tickets and more information on this, thefandc.com/events. Caller 10 at 800-636-1067. You are going to win tickets. We'll be doing this all season long on Grant and Danny. Thank The Wiz for that. Very, very cool. It is time in just a moment for our Beltway Blitz, but first, I want to remind you that Washington has built a foundation for success on and off the field, and it's time for you to think about that foundation for yourself. The exclusive sponsor of this show, the law firm Condori & Murad, can help. They will update your last will and testament. They will set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Tell them we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. Danny, we'll see our guys, Condori and Murad,
tomorrow night. Yes.
We'll be in Philly with them at the Link. We'll be watching football with them. Second time we'll be at a road game with them. The first time the Commanders put up their performance of the year.
Just about as much fun as we've had watching football in terms of what that offense was doing. It was back and forth. Cincinnati couldn't be stopped either. That was a show.
All right, it's time for the Beltway Blitz. Let's start off on the ice. Lars Eller acquired via trade yesterday by the Capitals. It does not sound like Lars Eller is going to be playing today. He will not be in the lineup. Hendrix LaPierre gets one last ride. They're going to get Eller in the lineup, presumably getting him in, getting him ready, getting him ramped up, and then he will be their third-line center, Danny. But if you're LaPierre, you got one more chance here to get right now. May not matter because they just made the trade and they're going to be playing Eller, but still a good opportunity for him.
Yeah, and maybe takes the pressure off, right? Knowing that none of the writing is on the wall, but like your papers have been handed to you pretty much, right? No matter what you do, good, bad, and different, you're probably, you know, on the way down to Hershey. But good opponent tonight in Toronto, a team that can obviously score. We know about some of the pedigree there, but I'll be interested to see how Eller fits in to kind of get that third line going, which is a point you made really well at the top of the show.
Logan Thompson is the netminder for the Capitals tonight. He's been going every other game. They've been doing this, what I call like boy, girl thing, where he, Lindgren, go back and forth. This is the first time they've broken that to have anyone start back-to-back games.
I mean, he was, I thought, outstanding against St. Louis.
Right? So
I thought
Garps.
I suppose the coaching staff did too.
They're running it back. He made 25 saves on 26 shots. But here's, I think, why they're doing it. They probably want him to go against the Vegas Golden Knights coming up in what is going to be a really difficult game. He beat them earlier in the season. It's his former team. He gets up for that opponent, it seems like. So maybe just to make sure that the rotation of every other has him playing against Vegas, they're kind of reversing the order here after a few days off, and they'll have him and then Lindgren alternate that way.
That makes sense, right? So if he plays against Toronto, then you'd have Chucky against the Avalanche on the road, and then Thompson in goal against the Vegas Golden Knights.
As far as the Maple Leafs go, Austin Matthews has not been completely healthy this year. He's been in and out of the lineup with health, hasn't played here recently, so Whether you get 100% of him has kind of been a big question going into this game for the Capitals. But more importantly, in-house, worrying about ourselves and goals for the Capitals, Alex Ovechkin looking for goal number 11 already this season. He's got 10 goals in 14 games, and a lot of the national pundits who said he wasn't going to break the record for goals scored this year are already changing their tune on Alex Ovechkin.
Well, yeah, you get off that kind of rip-roaring start. Remember last year, it was, you know, we're doing the what's wrong, and not only, you know, has he slowed down, but are we going to get there at all? Is he actually going to break the record? I mean, that was not a terrible, ridiculous conversation, the slow pace that he was on, whatever it was, 6 goals through, you know, a couple dozen games, through 30 games, 40 games. It just wasn't happening. And the second half of last year did happen, which kind of got us back into the right conversation on pace, and he's picked right up where he's left off. In fact, he's probably been better to start this year than he was even down the stretch.
Look at the goals leaders in the NHL so far this season. First of all, you'll see that the Caps are the only team in the league right now who have 2 guys who have 10-plus goals. Pretty awesome. That's number one, because both Ovechkin and McMichael have scored 10 times. But on top of that, Alex Ovechkin at this moment is tied in the top 8 in scoring in the National Hockey League as he approaches 40 years old. And he's only 2 goals off the pace. Sam Reinhardt has 12, Leon Draisaitl has 12, and Cole Caulfield with Montreal has 12. Ovi is nipping at their heels. We got a Rocket Richard chase at the moment very, very early on Ovi. But nothing's ever been truer. The greatest named website in the history of the world, Russian Machine, never breaks. There's just no doubt about it. Alex Ovechkin does not relent. All right, let's keep the blitz moving.
I got Chase Hughes, covers the Wizards. That's why he's going to come talk about the Wizards with us right now. Chase, what's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure as always. Catch us up. So, Washington, San Antonio tonight. What do we need to know?
Yeah, we got a good one on Monumental Sports Network. I think going into the season, as soon as the schedule came out, I'm sure a lot of people circled this one on the calendar because there's just a lot of storylines between the Wizards and the Spurs. Obviously, the Spurs have Victor Wembanyama, one of the most exciting young players in the league, and him and Bilal Coulibaly go way back as childhood best friends who were also teammates in France professionally and then last summer in the Olympics. And now there's a new French player who's sort of entered the equation, which is Alex Saar, the second overall pick. And I think that's going to be a great matchup for him because I think everyone can see that Wembanyama is one of the most unique players in the league, probably going to be a superstar in short order. And I think if you were to design a player in a laboratory to defend him, it might look a lot like Alex Saar. So it'll be interesting to see that how he does with that early test. And then beyond that, Alex Saar was the second overall pick. You've also got Stefan Castle, the 4th overall pick, who was taken by the Spurs. So certainly a lot of intrigue in this game.
Chase, I don't mean this to sound negative because I love Wemby, and watching him is a treat. But he was so good last year. He was the rookie of the year. He finished 2nd on the DPOY. I was expecting just a pretty huge leap to start this season where it was another gear. His scoring's down a little bit. Rebounds are about the same. Assists are down a little bit. And maybe it's just that the team isn't playing as well. I really don't know what I don't know. He's on his way to leading the league in blocks for a 2nd straight year. But what have you made of Wemby's start, and why hasn't there been kind of another pretty big leap forward for him so far early this season through 11 games?
Well, first of all, I agree with you. I mean, they've been better than they were last year, but I thought they'd have a little bit better of a record than they currently have, and that maybe they'd even make the playoffs this year. Right now, it doesn't look like they're on course to do that. But I think what you're seeing is a guy who's obviously extremely talented, but is probably further along defensively than he is offensively. I think he's the most talented defensive player I've ever seen. I mean, his ability to block shots, but also just his versatility, his instincts, his athleticism on that side of the floor. I've never seen anything like it. I think he will probably go down as the best defensive player of all time. I think he'll get there with many Defensive Player of the Year awards. He already was a runner-up last season, but offensively, he's kind of trying to figure out who he is. And a lot of people have pointed this out, that he's playing a lot away from the basket. And look, we know he's got the skill set to do that. His agility, his ability to handle the ball, create off the dribble, shoot from the outside is extremely unique. But at the end of the day, he's 7'4", right? Like at some point, I think he's going to have to learn how to use that to his advantage. And that's probably over time going to include more plays around the basket because no one can block his shot because he's so tall.
Chaser, what's our early return, early verdict here through nine games played on Jordan Poole on the ball? There's a lot I like, but I'm wondering if that's how everybody's best deployed and served. Just give me your thoughts.
Yeah, so, last year, obviously, he was off the ball for the first half of the season, really struggled. Then they moved him on the ball in the second half, and he was much better. And this year, I think so far, he's been closer to what we saw in the second half of last season. He's leading the team in scoring at about 20 points a game. His efficiency has been all right, certainly better than it was in the first half of last year. And I think that the Wizards, they have a long way to go on both ends of the floor, but I don't think he's been one of their biggest problems so far. If you look at some of their best lineups based on net rating, he's been in just about all of them. So I think the offense has been good when he's on the floor. And he's actually been off to a really good start defensively. He leads the team in steals. He's been one of the best players in the league in that category also when it comes to deflections. And I talked to him about that recently, and he said that, he's just in a much better role defensively because the team is much bigger. He doesn't have to, guard bigger players. He's on the court with guys like Alex Saar and Jonas Valanciunas, and less is being asked of him in a lot of ways. So I think he feels pretty good about his start on both ends of the floor, and he's getting a lot of praise from Brian Keith for his defense.
Rank the first rounders in order of who's impressed you most to least of the three first rounders.
Ooh, that's a great question because I think it's been pretty close for all three of them. I might put Bub Carrington number one because he's the one guy of the three whose shooting percentages are about where you'd want them to be. He's the one guy shooting above 40%. Alex Saar, though, I think the most impressive skill of the three that we've seen so far has been his shot blocking. Yeah, he started his career with six straight multi-block games. No player had done that in 31 years, so even though he has struggled to shoot the ball on offense, he's been really good defensively. And then, maybe 2B would be Keyshawn George. I think his efficiency hasn't been where we saw it was in the summer league and the preseason. But overall, he's been, I think, very impressive defensively with deflections. And then also offensively, he's just a smart player who makes the right play, who never seems to force anything offensively and is a very willing passer. So I think they've all shown flashes, and we'll have to see how things play out over time.
Chase, thank you, buddy. Talk soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
We'll see you, my dude. Hit that local 53 sounder, please. Liam Griffin covers the Commanders for the Washington Times. Going to join us on the Beltway Blitz right now. Liam, huge one tomorrow night. Not much time to lick your wounds. Give us a preview. What do you see tomorrow?
Well, I see a tough task for a young Commanders team that is still trying to find their rhythm and find their identity. Obviously, things are easy when you're blowing out the Carolina Panthers and, winning on Hail Marys against the Bears. But after a tough loss against the Steelers, I think this is kind of a test of how far this team has come on with a divisional matchup on Thursday.
How can this secondary slow down that receiver room of Philly without Marshawn Lattimore?
I mean, that's going to be the question of the day, and I think that's going to decide a lot of the game, really, because A.J. Brown is enough to give any secondary nightmares. And for a Commanders team that is going to be relying on Benjamin St. Juice primarily against him, that's not a great matchup. I think Devontae Smith, you feel a little bit better having Mike Samristo out there. He's someone who can be physical, and Devontae Smith is a smaller guy on the outside. But A.J. Brown is one of those players who can take over a game and really embarrass some lesser talent on the outside. So I think you're going to see safety help over the top. I think you're going to see the Commanders defense try to bring more pressure on Jalen Hurts to take away those deep balls that kind of doom them against the Steelers on Sunday.
What difference does Brian Robinson make coming back for this offense?
He does a lot for the offense, not just as obviously he's running 4.6 yards per carry. He's one of the most talented backs in the league, but I think he opens up their flexibility as an offense. Cliff Kingsbury has this reputation as, if you're not following the game closely, this air raid, spread them out guy. But to me, the most interesting stuff that he does as a play caller is his run schemes. And Austin Eckler and Jeremy McNichols have performed admirably when they're filling in, but they do not provide the identity that Brian Robinson helps provide. I think they are more comfortable opening up the run scheme with Brian Robinson back there, working in some more Jaden Daniels runs and really relying on that run game instead of just using it to open up the pass.
And B-Rob made it pretty clear he's good to go and he will be full go. What about the tackles? little bit more coy on that from Dan Quinn. Sounded like they both did more in practice yesterday. Do we think Lucas or Wiley or both are going to be able to start at right tackle and back the other up?
So I talked to Wiley yesterday, and he seems to be feeling better. And he said that Sunday's game was a real game-time decision, which is something they like to avoid, obviously. He was good enough to suit up on Sunday in an emergency, but I think he'll be good to go to start tomorrow night. But I feel like with Lucas and Coleman, I think they're both just kind of nursing those injuries. I think you'll probably see Coleman start, but I think they'll both suit up and both be available in case need be. But they've got a tough task, and that team, that offensive line in particular, did not hold up that well against the Steelers pass rush, and it doesn't get much easier against the Eagles.
Where's Ben Sinnott? And I know he plays a little bit. It seems like when they do two tight ends, he's in there to block, and then he just retreats to the sideline immediately. Zekerts has like 7 yards after the catch numbers approximate. You know, like at some point, wouldn't it be interesting to see what Ben Sinnott can do?
Yeah, it will. And he's someone that I've really liked coming out of the draft. I'm obsessed with the idea of a fullback in a modern offense. And obviously he's not quite that, even though he's lined up in the backfield a lot in college. But I think with a lot of these rookies on the offense in particular, they are trying to work them in slowly as much as possible. It's the same thing. We talked about it last week with Luke McCaffrey. Like, you want to see him find his spot in the offense a little bit more. And especially with Sinnott, John Bates is a blocking tight end, but he has not filled that role that well this season. And so I think the team's going to start recognizing that and working Sinnott into the offense more, because man, he has flashed the ability to be a difference maker in practice and training camp and in college. And I think he's just kind of waiting on that opportunity.
What is your prediction for tomorrow night in Philly?
I think that's going to be a really tough game. I think that Philadelphia is also the healthier team. Devontae Smith was limited in practice, but other than that, they've got a clean bill of health coming into this game, whereas the Commanders are coming off that tough loss and still, you know, they've been bit pretty hard by the injury bug the past couple weeks. And going into an away game on a Thursday night, Cincinnati early in the season was one thing, but this is a really hot Eagles team. I think the Commanders are going to have their work cut out for them. I think they might end up losing this game, but at the same time, I don't think that's putting a nail in the coffin in the season or anything. It gets easier coming down the stretch. They've got Cowboys twice. They've got the Titans coming in. I think that it might be a tough loss, but you'll get a rematch later in the season.
Liam, thank you, buddy. Enjoy the week.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Check out Liam Griffin's work. Covers the Commanders in the Washington Times. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. It just seems to me like a lot of fans are chalking this up as a loss. I've had a lot of people today say, oh, well, they'll be 7-4, but that's all right. They can beat the Cowboys, beat the Titans, be 9-4 going into the bye. Why is everyone acting like they can't beat the Eagles tomorrow? What am I missing? That's next on The Fan.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Austin Eckler will be on the show in a half hour. Can't wait for our weekly appointment with the Commanders running back right here on G&D. Thanks for making the show part of your day. We're with you for another 2 hours on our penultimate show before Commanders-Eagles tomorrow night, Lincoln Financial Field in Philly. Have you ever been to that stadium?
Not that one. I went to the Vet a long time ago. I played games in the Vet, baseball, which was terrible, and I saw a football game in the Vet, which was also terrible.
So I've obviously never sat in the crowd at the link, because why would I do that? That would be a bad idea. But I have been there many, many times as Pressbox Paulson covering games. It's an outstanding stadium. I don't like to give them a lot of credit on much. They did a really good job
with it. They get that one right.
It's just nice. It's a good place to go watch a game. There's a lot of things about it I like. They also have the really cool situation, which would be amazing to have in D.C., but we never will, because even if the Commanders end up playing at RFK Stadium, there's not going to be, you know, ballparks near each other. But I am envious of the downtown, very city, suburban layouts where, like, you can hit a golf ball from one building to the other. So right across the parking lot from the link is the Wachovia Center, which is where the Sixers, for now.
That's where Joel Embiid rests.
They're getting a new they're getting a new arena. Joel Embiid, yeah, that's where he takes his naps.
It's where DNP coaches decisions.
Where he doesn't play. And, of course, where the Flyers play. But in the same parking lot, you might have to hit the golf ball a couple times. There's Citizens Bank Park. So they're all right there. Like, it's right off 95. You get off 95, you loop around under an underpass, you come out on this little, I think it's like Patterson Avenue, I believe it is. I always thought it was Reuben Patterson, their crappy corner, who played here. I shouldn't say he's crappy. He was probably fine. But he played here as well. But their non-star corner. Maybe it was named after him.
Could be.
But yeah, like Patterson Avenue, whatever it is. You go straight down that little strip, and then boom, boom, boom. All three of them right there. It's really cool looking.
I'm jealous of that. Like, Baltimore has that, you know, where it's like Camden and whatever the bank stadium is. They basically share common grounds in the middle. Like, to walk to the football stadium, you walk right by the warehouse, you know, just outside of Camden Yards. Like, it's perfect. That kind of thing, I think, is really cool. It's almost like the stadium district. I'm down with that.
We will not have that.
No, no, that's not for us.
But maybe, just maybe, we will have a stadium in Washington, D.C. Although I saw yesterday, I don't know if you saw this update, that Steve Daines, who's the Montana senator that we had on this show, how long ago was that now? That would have been in the offseason. But it's got to have been, I don't know.
Summertime? Was it early spring,
yeah,
maybe?
6 to 8 months ago or something. He was on our show. So he is still doing the, it's about my people, you know, that my constituents, it's about this family, it's about me thing. Originally, what did he come out and say? His point on our show was the team needs to make this right with this family. The Blackfeet logo. I'm trying to remember the name of the family. The Wetzels, I think it was.
Yeah, the Wetzels.
And he had the you know, the grandson, and I'm representing him and his late grandfather, and this family's amazing. And all that's true, I'm sure. I'm happy that you're representing them. That's your job. But that was his big thing, was the team needs to make it right. Well, the team did God knows how many hours of conversing with him and working with the family, and they have now since at the stadium put up this really nice exhibit, basically, with the old logo and a lot of the old stuff, and the story of the Blackfeet tribe, and the, you know, information on the Wetzels and the guy that created it. And theoretically, they did what we were supposed to do. Like, hey man, here's our olive branch. And his thing now is you got to go back to the old logo. Like, that was essentially what he was suggesting via social media. It's not as much now, Danny, about, hey, let's make sure we do right by the Wetzels and the Blackfeet logo. It's go back to your logo. He's still doing the thing.
Yeah.
He's kind of moved the goalposts here a little bit, as far as I can tell. So I'm over this at this point. I'm kind of annoyed by the whole process. This just feels like politics at its core and at its worst, and you're dangling something out there that no one can appease. It's not going to matter as of the 19th. It's the next chance they have to move the ball down the field, and hopefully they do. But that's the update that I last saw. He was actually talking today on the floor about the Blackfeet logo again, and that's now become the priority again, is that the team changes the name back to the logo, or their
change the logo back,
which they're not doing. I know that. You know that. 96% of our listening audience that knows that. There's 4% that are, you know, people that really want them to change the logo back, and that's just not happening. And Steve Daines is saying, do this. But I want to go back to the part where it was just, hey, make the family feel special. Hey, do something that shows that you have respect for the old logo.
Yeah.
They've done that. Those are the things they can do.
Where it's here's the museum thing, or here's this attribution, or here's this. Good? And they might be like, yeah. I don't know if they said, yeah, I have no idea. But, you know, then there's other folks waiting in the wings, too. The Maryland senator who has an interest in doing things for Maryland, you would think. Who doesn't want it to go in D.C.? Doesn't want the stadium to move. And there's someone else is going to rear their ugly head in 7 minutes, too, where they have a chance to grandstand. So,
I am old enough to remember
yeah.
when they couldn't play in D.C. because their name was Redskins. And their logo was what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And now they can't go back to D.C. because they changed their logo and name.
It's funny when you put it that way.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah, you're right.
Is there a different way to put it?
Well, I would say it's more complicated than that.
Well, of course.
But your point's right.
But this guy has a lot of power and influence, yeah. and right now is the fly in the ointment. There will be other flies in the ointment, and there were flies before him.
Everyone's buzzing.
But right now, the biggest fly that you got to worry about in the ointment is this guy, and it's because they're not the Redskins, and they don't have that logo anymore. And I am old enough to remember
That's right.
when the idea was it was Eleanor Holmes Norton, or is it Norton Holmes?
Holmes Norton.
Holmes Norton and the different, all the people in D.C. they had to appease and appeal to, and Muriel Bowser and all these people. There's no way you'll ever get this stadium in my city if you're named the Redskins. Okay, well, cool. They're not the Redskins anymore. They're the Commanders. So where do we go? We'll just talk to
Nowhere
that guy
is
over
the
there.
Answer. Yeah.
And he goes, you can't talk to me until your name's the Redskins and your logo is this. So it's like an SNL sketch.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's so everyone else, when they get a stadium,
it's almost like they're stuck between two parties who disagree.
Whoa, let's not get inflammatory here. Remember, we agree with you.
I agree with you listening right now.
The thing that you hate, we hate too. Now, the thing I'm going to tell you is everywhere else where they go through their own process, like local politics stink and they're super annoying and everything is irritating. But you don't have the magnifying glass that we do here, or the microphone glass.
Microphone
glass. We have the state, our version of state and local. Is like just interrupted by the building that's like a couple hundred yards up from us where we are right now. Because it ain't local. That's as national as it gets, dude. We're right next to the HQ. That new stadium at the RFK site, if it ever happens, is only a handful of miles from where these dudes sit. So the complicated relationship magnifies all the bureaucracy and all the stupid parts of our thing and makes it seem like it's impossible for anything to happen. Good, bad, or indifferent, by the way.
Well, here's what I was
in terms
told.
Of stadiums.
Now, again, the only reason I even bring this up is because this afternoon, like earlier in our show, he was speaking on the floor. So it was just front and center.
Right.
Not necessarily. It's a not update until November 19th, 6 days from now, which is next Thursday, the next time there is some moment that's going to matter in all of this. And it's actually going to be fairly telling, I think. There's either going to be a lot of progress made next Thursday, or it's going to be another letdown moment where it's going to be a long time. And you start to go, how long are you willing to drag this out? But I talked to someone who's privy to a lot of what's going on with this search in D.C. and this fight and trying to get the stadium into the nation's capital over the last couple of years. And I talked to them fairly recently. And they basically said to me that November 19th is a huge date.
Mm-hmm.
That's the next big date. That's the one coming up next week. And that essentially by early to mid-December, there should be rumblings that things are moving toward this working out. And that if around the holidays... there's not major good news and there's not major progress made. By the time you're wrapping your Christmas presents and you're going to your Christmas party and you're, you know, Santa's coming to visit the kids and all that, if this we're still in the same boat we're in right now, that is a very, very bad sign. And that as of the early part of next year, there's got to be a very real conversation with ownership as to whether or not they just go forward in Maryland. If they have to wait another year because November 19th right. doesn't go well, because the progress isn't made at the end of the year that needs to be, that basically if they're in the same boat, they then have to decide, are we going to have another year at Northwest Stadium? Are we going to, and instead of 2030, now it's 2031. Are we? And by the way, there's no guarantee that the politics are better or that when you get past Danes in Montana, that some guy from Maryland doesn't hold it up next or whatever else could happen, right? At that point, you just got to go, do we just want to move forward and build a Taj Mahal somewhere out by Northwest Stadium and get our $400 million from PG County and build a Reston Town Center, you know, around the stadium that is an awesome place to go?
What about Virginia? They're still employed, aren't they? They're not. They took themselves right out of the running.
Oh, man.
Their behavior took them right out.
They can't give you a stadium, but they can give you memes.
Here we go. Having a good time. Oh, that's good.
Oh, me.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, me. But that's the timeline.
Yep.
From what I was described to me, if by around the holidays there's no progress, it's a very bad sign. and that by the early part of next year, now they could just say DC or bust, and they could just stay at that stadium that they're at now in perpetuity until they get DC, if that's really what they want to do.
But at a certain point.
I think, well, that point, from what I'm being told, is around the holidays this year. That early next year, they would have to go, this is just not a thing. It's not worth it, and or we can't figure it out.
And you can't count on it getting figured out.
That's the problem. If you just had a hurdle you had to clear, then you would just keep training and hurdle it. But the problem is, it's like a video game. You have to beat this level, but you don't know what other levels, what other bad guys are going to be put in front of you after this. In the video game, you know, okay, I got to beat level 7, then 8, 9, and 10, and I beat the game. This is, you're beating level 7, but there could be a bunch of levels you don't know about and a bunch of bad guys. It could never end. It could just keep coming and coming and coming. And so at some point, there's just a really easy path forward where you could have a better stadium with a better surrounding area, potentially, in what is a very much worse location. And that's irrefutable. No disrespect to Maryland or PG County, but we're comparing it to downtown D.C. for the Washington football operation. Obviously, the better location is the nation's capital, the most powerful city in the world. At some point, though, you got to go, is this worth it? And how long are we going to wait?
Yeah, if there was any certainty the only variable was time, you would wait. But there's no guarantee it ever happens, is the point. So, like, when you watch a season of Entourage from back in the day, like, everything was like, dude, we got a movie. And then it's like, yo, we just found out the producer hates Vince. No movie. And then that's the show. The whole season is that yes, no, yes, no. They'd solve a little problem. A new little fire would come up. And then at the end, they make the movie, right? You don't know that there's a movie getting made here. You don't know. Every positive bit of momentum. Like, to me, the craziest thing that happened in all this is the that one Republican senator going, yeah, the mayor and I are buds, and we're on the same page, and let's kickstart this and have this negotiation that takes place. Everyone's going, oh, my God, okay, crap, what do we do? And everyone's running over their hair on fire. And then all that momentum, look how far it went. One step, and that's it. And now we're back in a similar spot where that didn't mean anything. So if you're sitting there waiting on a resolution, you're going to be waiting forever. Just the nature of this convoluted, ridiculous system is that you want an answer one way or the other. If it's a no answer, I can deal with that. It'll be disappointing, but I can put my big boy pants on and move on and grow up. But it's the waiting and getting nothing where it's, okay, if this is solved, then this fire starts. If this is solved, then this fire starts. And at some point, you kind of go, this seems to be the pattern. New fires will start. I've given up.
What kind of impact is Brian Robinson going to have for Washington in his return tomorrow against Philadelphia? We'll get into that next. Austin Eckler joins us at the top of the hour on Grant and Danny. Grant and Danny, welcoming you back on the fan. Thank you for making the show part of your day. Austin Eckler joins us coming up in 15 minutes. Commanders Eagles in Philly tomorrow night. I don't know if you're hearing the same thing I am. I'm getting a vibe that people are expecting a loss. But beyond that basically fans are treating this as if, okay, they're going to lose to the Eagles, but it's okay because you'll bounce back against the Cowboys. Like, I've gotten, I don't know, 10 or 12 people probably the last couple days on Twitter saying, you lose to Philly, but then you win the next two, you'll go into the bye 9-4. And I just don't think this is a loss that's scheduled. I don't think this is a there's no way you beat the Eagles kind of game. To me, there's three types of football games. There's a game you chalk up as a win, a game that is a toss-up, kind of could go either way, and a game you chalk up as a loss. Now, obviously, you could win the ones that get chalked up as losses, and you could lose the ones that get chalked up as wins. Nothing's guaranteed. That's why you play the game. But just on paper, every single game is in one of three categories. You should win it. You should lose it. Or let's see what happens because it's close enough. To me, this feels like the middle one. This feels like the let's see what happened game. And I feel like a lot of Commanders fans, for whatever reason, are treating this, I don't know if it's the short week, the Thursday nature of this, on a turnaround going on the road. I'm not really sure why, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
But do you have that same feel based on conversations you're having that it's being treated like, well, they're going to lose this game, but it's okay, ..
Yeah, it's twofold. It's two extremes. The normal cadre of people that are like, every time they play, they're going to win by 37 points, who yell no matter what. That voice is constant. Bless those guys, by the way. you're coming back for more, regardless of information. You're super excited about the team and bullish, and it's awesome.
We need you.
Seriously.
Tip of the spear.
You are enthusiastic, and that is awesome. Let any rain on that parade. You just keep marching with your drums. The other side, though, is exactly that. It's the, well, after this, you'll have a chance to regroup, and you're still going to have a good season. Now, the hard part here is I'm about to try to argue against that. Well, also, spoiler alert, I'm going to predict they lose. I don't think they win this game. But I think those are different things. And that's the point. I'm trying to distinguish that here.
I expect them to lose. I'm just acknowledging that they absolutely could win. And, yeah, I'm going to pick the Eagles, but this is not a game where it would be shocking if they won. Are they still a 3-point underdog on the road? 3.5 at worst, probably?
I'll double check.
I mean, it is a toss-up kind of game. This is not a, well, they'll lose that one, so you got to beat this team. Uh-uh. This is a, you think the Eagles just think they're going to roll the footballs out and beat Washington? No way.
3.5-point dogs on the road, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you get two, in this era, it used to be 3 for being at home. Smart people that do that for a living told me it's probably more like 2, 2.5, depending on the stadium now. But regardless, it means that on a neutral site, they'd probably be a 1.5 dog to Philly. That's about as close to a toss-up or a pick'em as you're going to find. I just don't get this idea that, like, they can't compete with the Eagles.
Here's where I think it comes from. And again, I'm not agreeing, but I'm guessing. I'm trying to put my... What hat is this? I don't even know what hat I'm putting on. I'm putting on a hat where I try to figure this out. I think some of the narratives of the naysayers have crept in here, okay? And it's to say they don't have a good win on the resume. Their best win is against an Arizona team that was playing terribly then, but now has played better since. That's their one win against the team that now has a winning record. Other than that, they've played good teams in Tampa when they played them. Not Tampa now. Tampa then was good. Baltimore and the Steelers, and they have lost all three. So, ipso facto, Philadelphia's playing much better. They've got the pedigree. We're used to them being really good as division winners multiple times over, Super Bowl contenders, etc. They look like they're big back. Washington is not a paper tiger. They're better than that, but they're also not ready to compete against the good teams. Therefore, Washington's going to lose. And that's my case as to why they'll come in second in this game specifically. No Marshawn Lattimore. Not like the idea that they can't win and that we're just chalking this up, I think, is ridiculous.
Well, here's my question to that hypothetical person you were wearing the hat of.
Yeah, that's good. I'm wearing the hat.
Why is Washington a paper tiger and Philly isn't? Philly has beaten nobody. They're 5-0 in this got right era. You know, this 5-0 run that they're on, plus 82 point differential, second only Detroit, number one in defense, number one in scoring and yardage allowed. They have played teams that are a combined 13 and 38. So let's not pretend like, well, Washington's a paper tiger. Whatever Washington is, Philly is. They got blown out by the Bucks just like Washington did.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, if you look at common opponents, it's kind of favorable to the Commanders who blew out Cleveland and Philly didn't. A couple of examples like that along the way. In the chat on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube stream, Billy said, we're going to get stomped, but then we're going to beat the Cowgirls. I'm kind of wondering, like, where is that coming from? Maybe they do, and maybe you guys are right. They have not been stomped since week one against Tampa, which I don't really count as relevant to this team because nothing about that performance looks anything like performances 2 through 10 so far this season. They didn't get, like, stomped. They went on the road in primetime once. They won the game, scored almost 40 points, and played lights out. They've actually been better on the road, maybe, than at home, to be honest with you. But, like, the best teams they've played, Baltimore didn't stomp them. Pittsburgh didn't stomp them. They led by 10 in the second half. Why would they get stomped? Is it just maybe we talked ourselves into when they got Lattimore, how bad? It was almost like you broke up with a girl, then all your buddies told you how awful the girl was, and now you have to get back with the girl. And it's like we're putting that toothpaste back in the tube because we've all talked about when they traded for Lattimore, how badly you're going to need him against the Eagles, how this group can't defend the good receivers, how St. Houston, everyone needs to be bumped down the depth chart. And now you don't have him and you're going, oh, well, you can't possibly defend the Eagles receivers. So now, like, we said the bad things out loud already and we can't take them back.
Yeah, now Chandler has to go back with Janice on Friends, and that's kind of where we are.
Let's go to Rick in Richmond on Grant and Danny. What's up, Rick?
How y'all doing?
Good, buddy.
You know, this is the same bandwagon fans that, you know, that we had the fair weather fans of last year, and they're kind of still stuck on the team of last year, right? We're a different team. We're a team that has now a chance and a fight, and go into the game thinking we're going to win this game. This is a winning team and a winning culture. So I guarantee you they're going to go into where they're going to – Philly's going to come to D.C., and we're going to handle business. I mean, it's going to be a home game. We are going to take care of business. Thanks for the call, guys.
Thanks, appreciate buddy. You, dude.
So, in a home game, maybe they'll feel different about. I don't know if it's because tomorrow's on the road on a short week or what. And I'm not trying to make this a rah-rah, grab your pom-poms. Washington's going to go win one for the Gipper. Like, that's not what I'm doing. I just – like the rest of you, I've watched their entire season.
Yep.
And I don't see how you could go into this game expecting that they had no chance or were going to get worked, which has not happened, again, since week one. And if they replayed that game this week, it wouldn't happen, even against Tampa. Caleb, Chevy Chase, what's good?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Hey, buddy.
I'm a Philadelphia refugee, been living in the area for 25 years. And over the years, I've enjoyed calling and trolling you guys whenever the Eagles play the Redskins, the football team, the Commanders, you know, take your pick. But this time, this is a curious one for me, and I kind of want to turn the back on to you two. You were explaining how you feel as though there's all this negative energy, and you're not buying it, but you've both predicted Eagles wins. And I got to tell you, I've watched every single Eagles game. The only player you got to be afraid of is Saquon Barkley. Tell me why you're even picking the Eagles to win.
Well, you're forgetting about A.J. Brown,
who has had a wonderful time against Washington,
can't
sir.
Wait to go for 127 on seven catches with a touchdown. I'm assuming Devontae Smith's going to play, who's been limited in practice and questionable. But they don't have anybody who's going to cover him. That type of receiver, that smaller, diminutive, shifty guy gives them fits. I think they're going to be able to move the ball offensively. But the flip side is when someone says, okay, so you agree. No, I don't. I think Jaden Daniels plays well. I think the offense goes out and scores 27 to 30 points. And I think that it's a tight game in the end. Like, I think Philly squeaks it out. If this was a Sunday game in Philly, I would probably feel differently, though. I'm picking them because I think it's hard to go on the road on a Thursday after a short week after you played a super physical Steelers team. You're banged up. But even the injury news today is good. Robinson is full go.
Yep.
Sounds like Wiley is going to start at right tackle. Maybe Lucas is going to play. We don't know. Other than the kicker and Lattimore, you're in a pretty good place.
As good as you can be, you know, playing 10 straight weeks. I mean, for A.J. Brown, though, just as a quick side, he's on 1,500-yard pace. He's missed a handful of games. So, like, the idea that the only person you got to worry about is Barkley, I just respectfully disagree. I would watch my own team a little more closely if you're a Philly guy. But I mean, to me, there's pedigree there too that I think carries over and matters in terms of people's minds and mindset going into a game like this, where it's okay if we're finding Philly when they're struggling and Nick Sirianni is yelling at fans, maybe now's the time. Oh crap, they've gotten right. It's five straight for a team that wins 12, 13 games every year. That's part of the feeling.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. Let's talk about this game with a guy who will be playing in it. Austin Eckler is going to be joining us next for our weekly appointment. Thanks to our friends at IT Cadre. Make sure you're listening. Top of the hour on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.